Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Welcome to the Stardom Road podcast here on the Count Out Network. I am your host, Scott Edwards, and with me, as always, is Trent.
Oh, often you will do like you'll say something immediately after saying my name, and I was giving you pause to add something there, but we're just jumping straight to me. Hello, everyone. Yes, I'm also here with a big introduction or a small one.
You were expecting some like nice remark or some sort of
it's not always nice
statement.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm always normally nice on this podcast. Point. I'm always nice on this podcast.
You are. Yeah. We're very palatable on stuff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Keyword is this podcast. Not all. Just this one. But yes, this is Stardom Road. Everybody, welcome. And it is episode 3, part 3. Of the Orisa Hoshiki series that I know a lot of people have been enjoying. We have too. And today was the most enjoyable episode to get prepared for, of course, because it was all about watching her great matches from her career. Not every single one, that's a little bit overkill. And we didn't wait till the last second, right? Right, Trent?
No, totally not.
No, you didn't just finish the show. The last match right before we started recording. No, not a.
You may have messaged me as the 3 count happened, but it's all about timing, which, yeah, as you can see from earlier in the podcast, we don't always have. But I'd like to think I timed it quite beautifully this time.
Yeah, I'm starting to learn like how many people actually do listen to the show and how they listen to this show. So people like save it for like road trips and stuff like that, like with the parts and stuff.
The Stardom Road trip.
The
thought process. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope you're not watching the matches while you're driving, though.
No, I've also learned that people kind of, you know, they go back into the episodes. I've been told by a lot of people we're going back now. So,
that's what they're for. Like, they're not time sensitive, really. You can go back and listen to them whenever you want. And we try and keep them according. So we try not to worry too much about this thing literally just happened, because it dates things. And, you know, unless the wrestler is current, and in this case, unfortunately, they're not, you have a bit more free range.
Yeah, we would never record a show ahead of time and act like something just happened. We would never do that on any show on Stardom Road.
No, least. Not Stardom Road.
We don't have to pretend. yeah, that's true.
It's never backfired on me either.
No, never, never. But that's a lot of conversation. Anyways, we're talking to Risa Hoshiki here today, folks. The third and final episode of her dedicated series here. Don't worry,
we'll never mention her again.
I'll just say, don't worry.
The last time you'll hear Risa.
I don't think I'll allow it. I mean, there's going to be times that we have to talk about, you know, Jungle Kiona, Momo Watanabe, Tam Nakano, obviously. Tam Nakano might just have one per match because of how long it takes to read her tweets.
Especially translating them into English.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be an absolute blast doing that. When Tam retires, we'll do the 7-part series about Tam Nakano.
And well, good why, thing that ain't happening. So,
well, she did say she's looking for her with the trainees. She's looking for her heir apparent. So
yeah, but like, this is also the person who said she's literally never going to retire to Natsupoi, and then told her you're not retiring either.
This is also the same person that said 2 years ago I'm retiring in 2 years. So
Yeah. If there's anything you can learn from stardom talent, especially those who have gone to the Maya Iwatani school, is don't believe a damn thing they say.
I like it that way. I like it that way. And speaking of going to the Maya Iwatani school, aka Stars, Risa Ishiki, like I said, let's get back into this. So we're going to go over a couple matches here today, some of her best, some of her most important. We didn't get to go over all of them. She has many great matches because, you know, we have lives and we can't watch every single match. You know, she only had...
Because we do it last minute.
Yeah, exactly. We only have 151 matches to choose from. So it's not like we're, you know, dissecting the career of Manami Toyota over here and we have to pick like four out of 2000. But, you know, I don't know how many matches she actually has in her career. I just know she has a lot because AJW worked like an insane amount. But that's beside the point. We're going to start with one match from the first part of her career. And then we're going to do a lot of the big matches, especially in her title reign. One of them are my all-time, well, two of them are two of my all-time favorites. But we'll get to that. But let's kick it off now. And then
kick. We're going to be saying a lot about kicks this episode.
I also meant to add that we will be finishing this show up by talking about her legacy, her overall impact on stardom and its fans, truthfully, because, you know, she had a big one, even if she's no longer with the company anymore due to retirement. She still impacts us all these years later. Thank you, Tam Nakano. Anyways, we go to December 23rd, 2011, Arisa Hoshiki challenging for the Wonder of Stardom Championship against Yuzuki Aikawa. If you watch this match on Stardom World, like myself, it is clipped to shit. As in, the entire clip is like 9 minutes.
Yeah.
The match isn't long. I'm not going to sit here and act like the match was long to begin with. But this is a very clipped match. This is all the footage that they have from it. Year-end Stars 2011. But from what we do get to see, the match, by the way, is 10 minutes and 33 seconds. So they didn't clip that much. Because it's pretty much bell-to-bell, the actual film that they have up there. But for a match that involves pretty much two rookies, you know, Aikawa was a little more advanced, of course, but this was two rookies wrestling. It's very entertaining to watch. It's not, you know, with the other matches we're going to talk about, they're not like these apps. It's not like this absolute all-timer from Arisa Ishiki, but it's like the perfect match to highlight where she would be so many years down the road.
Yeah, look, in terms of like why we picked certain matches for this particular episode, we wanted to make sure we covered at least one match from before she started, before she came back the second time. And there's a few matches we can kind of pick from, but like you want something that's a singles match that kind of highlights where she was at. And honestly, there's really only a couple of matches that would make sense in this situation. And given the nature that basically every match we're covering is a Wonder of Stardom title match, it's kind of fun to go back to the very first time she interacted with that belt and tried to win it. And, you know, we have two challenges for the white belt today that we're covering. It's kind of fun to see, you know, attempt one versus attempt two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That belt's history is so crazy just to think about, because it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, you date back to that very first champion, and you have one of the greatest champions defending against who would go on to be one of the greatest champions of that belt, you know, and nobody knew that at the time. But I think that's kind of the specialty of this match, too. And what I love about this match, it's one that's, one, it's easy to go back and watch because, again, it's very short. But it's very raw in that, you know, when you see Arisa second part of her career, she's still a very raw wrestler in that she just kind of throws her body at things and it works.
Yeah.
But back then, this was like her throwing her body at things, kind of not being fully coordinated in doing so, but it still most of the time looked really good. And her offense here was, it was pretty advanced for someone with her skills at that time, which weren't all that. Like, she had a handful of matches to her belt at that time.
Yeah, she's literally a teenage rookie who hasn't, only really wrestled a handful of matches at this stage. Is still kind of toying between the idea of wrestling and shoot boxing. And you see that come through in her offense. It is very kick heavy, as you would expect, and going against another wrestler who has a very kick heavy offense. And, you know, rookie versus rookie, there's always kind of going to be that expectation that things aren't going to go 100% perfectly. There's an expectation there'll be a missed spot or they'll be off time a little bit here or there. But I think when you consider the levels that they're both at, they do a really good job here. Like if I was in my first year and I was wrestling another first year wrestler and I put forth a match like this, I would be pretty happy. Now, we don't know what got cut. Maybe there was a horrific kind of, you know, timing error botch. But even like in terms of watching this match, yes, it is clipped, but it, like, you can watch the match as it is presented on Southern World and it doesn't really feel like you're missing much in terms of the flow of the match. Like, yeah, if you didn't know it'd been heavily clipped, you'd probably just accept the kind of just a weird jolt in the middle and kind of stuff like that.
Yeah. And what I like to do with this type of match is you know, we look at a reset at that time and you start to think of like other trainees through Stardom's history. It's like, I don't know how many of them could have stepped into such a big spot. This, you know, she's 16 at the time. And live up to the moment in a lot of ways. And now back then, you know, like Kyle wasn't out there having absolute like 25, 26, 27, 8 minute barn burners. That's not what her style was. It was this rough, hard hitting, fast paced style. That's, it's not high speed, but it's quick. It, like, the pace is up. And I don't know many trainees that could have done that. I don't even think big rookie Utami might have been able to do that. And Utami was older, of course, when she was a trainee, so that definitely helps her. There's a reason the big rookie was such a big deal instantly. But at 16, I mean, obviously, there's only a handful to pick from there. Maybe Azumi would be the only one, because at the age of 16, she was already so many years into her career.
Yeah, she was a veteran at 16.
Yeah.
So it's a completely different kind of ball game as opposed to someone who's, you know, still in their first year when you factor in training as well. Like, you know, she wasn't training for that long before she got her first match. It definitely helps having that martial arts experience and background. You can kind of lean on that. Even when the wrestling side of things is a little underdeveloped, you can always go to, even if you're not connecting with the shots, but just kind of intimidating your opponent by throwing a series of kicks. Like, the crowd will still react to that, even if it's not meant to be connecting offense. Just kind of to warn people, like, yeah, if I wanted to, I can make this go ugly quickly, but in a good way.
Yep. So now we'll fast forward to the parts everyone's waiting for. I know what everyone's waiting for. They're waiting for the second run of Arisa Ishiki. And you know what? I think I was too when I was getting into this. I was waiting for her to have the title. Let's get into those matches. And we got to start off.
Do make sure you go back and watch that match.
Yes.
You know, there's nothing better when you're going through the history of a wrestler than to see the beginnings. And then, you know, in this case, it's quite a few years away. But when, in terms of actual in-ring time, it's not that long.
No, not at all. It's rather close. If you were only to go by match to match, it's like, it's very close within this match and the next match that we're talking about, which was, of course, was Arisa Ishiki winning that Cinderella tournament to get her shot at Momo Watanabe and the Wonder of Stardom Championship. And watching this match, I just sat there. I was like, wow, Momo's so much better now. That's like, and that's not a shot at Momo. Obviously, she was 18 at the time, having this historical reign, doing better again than most 18-year-olds probably will in that role. But I was like, she is like really so much more natural now, I think, and more comfortable in where she is and who she is as a competitor. But she was still great in ring wise. I mean, that was never a problem for Momo. With Arisa, I mean, we have talked about this for 3 episodes now. It's hard to be as natural as she was in the ring. And this match, out of the 4 that we're going to talk about, this is probably with the last one in terms of quality. And that's, again, it's just the next two matches to me are probably the two greatest matches in Rei Tsuchiya's career, in my opinion, at least. So we did miss a big one too. You know, Trent gave up the Jungle Kiona match. We appreciate him for that. But this match was big because obviously you have the idea that Rei Tsuchiya is going to end the record run of Momo Watanabe. And I think the part that I love of this is that Arisa was able to match the viciousness of Momo as the match went on. Because Momo is so in control for a lot of this match. And then Arisa just, you know, shoots out of a rocket like she does. And that's really where I think the match flips the script, is when Arisa flips the script.
Yeah, like this follows kind of a lot of the Momo Watanabe style back then, which was, and it still is to a certain extent, but not as much as it was when she was in this white belt run. Very kick-heavy offense. And, you know, she busts out the suplex game, especially towards the end of the match. But for a lot of the early stages, it's very kick-based offense. And obviously that ties well into Arisa Hoshiki's style. But in many ways, it's kind of like the evolved form of the match we just watched. Two very kick-heavy strikers going back and forth, basically seeing who can deliver the big knockout shot. And for a lot of her run, Momo Watanabe was able to deliver that. And it is interesting to kind of compare this, you know, I guess the apex of Momo's Queen's Quest run right here to the Oedo Tai version that we see in 2023. A lot of the DNA is there, especially in this form where she's ultra cocky and ultra confident in herself because she's had a record-breaking run. But it's kind of nice to see where, you know, kind of the first signs of that through this development of a character.
Yeah, and I think with this, in the way this match closed, and, you know, this was, by the way, I forgot to say the date. It was on May 16th, 2019, Gold May, so easy to remember that one. Main event, so this had the main event spot again over the World of Stardom Championship, which is, I think, is very important to know, to kind of play to how important it was. The match wasn't long. It didn't even touch 15 minutes, about 13 minutes or so. And I think that's kind of, as you see Arisa get back into the swing of things, you see that numbers start to go up a little bit,
yeah,
and more as she gets more comfortable. But she was so good in the shorter matches that she didn't need to hit that 20-minute, 25-minute mark that we're kind of used to with, say, Saya Kamatani and people like that, right? And what's interesting, I think Saya is actually better in the longer matches as opposed to Arisa, who's better in the shorter matches. And again, Arisa's matches didn't go all that long, so didn't have to worry about that. But I love the closing of this match because it's kind of just like, it's the realization that, one, what Momo was able to accomplish with this reign, you know, is incredible, good for her. But it's that Rei Tsuchiya's not only going to be the next champion, but she's going to be one of the next faces of this company. It just kind of feels like that type of win, because when you get this big of a win, which is kind of the conversation now happening with Saya Kamatani, it needs to mean more than just you beat them for the title.
Yeah, it's very much a struggle over who's going to hold the belt at the end of it. And you don't always get that in title matches. Like, you don't get the feeling that these two are fighting for not just the right to be champion, but kind of the prestige that comes along with that and the position in the company. You know, Momo has that spot and she has had it for, you know, a long time, and at her age, like, that's kind of, you know, was the evolution of her going from a high schooler to being the future ace of the company. And here comes Arisa challenging her for it in a way that no one else has, and it does become a real just fight for the life to hold on. And it's not intentional, I don't think, but in hindsight, seeing where Momo Watanabe's career kind of went after this match, Momo was right to kind of fight tooth and nail to hold on to this belt.
Now, let me ask you, in terms of, because I guess I could ask you at the end, but we don't do, I'll do it now. With this being the start of Arisa's reign, which we know what the reign would be, Where does this, like, is, do you consider this as one of the very best Wonder of Stardom title reigns of all time? Because for me, I, you know, as someone that has went back and watched the MoMA one, watched the Aikawa one, watched the EOS, those are all the ones that I, and I've obviously watched Saya's as it's gone on. For me, this, I think, has been better than the majority of them. I don't know. I don't know if I could place what is the best, because I gotta go back and forth. Like, I just watched these matches, right? Like with Tam and Hazuki and Utami, and it's like, man, this was good. And I know the Bea Priestley one's great. I know the Konami one's great. I know the Jungle one's great. So it's like, and this one never got to end correctly. So that's, I think, the part of the problem. Because if it ended correctly with a great match, which I'm sure it would have been, I think it would be easier to say, but in terms of what she was able to accomplish, it's at least in the conversation.
It definitely lacks the payoff, which hurts it. But I would rank it at the very least in the upper echelon of sort of white belt runs. You know, Momo Watanabe's run was very good and very important. EOS before there likewise had a lot of importance to it. But I think, you know, when you look at what Aris was able to do is, she continued the prestige that the belt had built up over the last few champions. But then beyond just that, like, she made it her own. And I think that's what the great champions do, is they make the reign their own. And, you know, like, whether you think Tam Nakano had one of the best reigns or not is definitely up for debate. I think there's enough weak spots in there to maybe stop it from being the top one.
Sure.
But her run with that belt felt important, and you can define that period of the white belt by her holding it. And I think that's an important stage for a champion to reach. Not all of them do it, but I think Arisa did manage to do that. And then you combine it with the consistent quality of these matches. Whether it's a top one or not, I haven't thought about it long enough to be 100% sure, but I think you could make a case that definitely top three.
Yeah, I mean, if I think about it long and hard enough, it probably is my favorite. Shocker, I know. But I think it also plays to the fact that she felt like the world champion.
Yeah.
During her time as champion. And maybe that has to do with who was world champion for majority of it. But it's still a impressive feat to get to that level and feel like you're in that spot. And like I said, fantastic stuff with the Momo Watanabe match. One of the weaker matches that we'll talk about today, because the next two, again, are that high, and then the last one we'll discuss is very important for many reasons, as I will point out. But let's get to it. Arisa Hoshiki versus Tam Nakano. I know multiple people on record saying this is not only the best match of her reign, not the best match of Tam Nakano's career, the best match of Arisa Hoshiki's career. Some say it's the best match in Stardom's history. That is how highly regarded this match is. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, it happened in Stardom's most popular year up until, you know, the Bushiroad years, of course. And it's pretty crazy to think about. But after rewatching it, you know, you don't need to know the full story for this match to be great. But this match is that much greater if you do know the story.
Yeah, like, you can come into it and enjoy it, and I think you can work out kind of the baseline emotions and feelings surrounding this match. But it is definitely one that benefits from knowing the story behind it, knowing Tam's influence, and where, not only in hindsight, especially where it goes as well. Because at this stage, like, their storyline, their rivalry was still very much finding it. I would say still finding its feet in a lot of ways. Like, it developed the first stage of it, but after this match, it kind of comes into the second stage, and I think that's what really makes it so valuable, because it was a storyline that grew and characters that evolved and benefited from it beyond just, oh, this is raising my profile.
There's so many moments to you know, to kind of pick out. I mean, this match is the launching point for what the Tam Nakano match would be. I think that's very important to point out for, you know, people who may want to know more about Tam, is that this is the match where her entire character pretty much goes to become.
Yeah.
Like it becomes her story, right? It becomes her story with that belt, but it is what her matches would all revolve around, you know, kind of that slow, quietly, like you get everyone quiet and there's a stare down, and there's a seriousness to each other. In this match specifically, you know, they were feeling each other out before, you know, they go to that boom moment and it's just off to the races from there. And I think when Tam Nakano's at her best is when someone else, and you and me have talked about this, is when someone else can bring their match into it. And by the end, it was the Arisa Shiki style match, which made it all come together so well. And it's just insane the amount of head kicks were in this match, the amount of just brutal strikes. Like this is probably the home of Arisa's most brutal knee strike. And she has a few. She has a few. One that you know, may catch someone a little too hard. She has a lot of great knee strikes. Like I think hers looks more vicious than any knee strike I've ever seen. And it's because I think most of the time she's not easing up too much. As I said, she throws her whole body at it. But this is fantastic. It gives you everything I think you want in a pro wrestling match.
Yeah, this is really like the genesis, as you said, of Tam Nakano, both as a character and a wrestler. This is what kind of made everyone stop and pay attention and go, yeah, Tam was popular before this match, but I think a lot of people were waiting to see her prove it in the ring. And this match made everyone stop and take notice and go, oh, there is a quality wrestler here. We'd seen glimpses of it in the past, but this is the one that kind of proved to everyone that, okay, Tam can be a main event level wrestler and tell these kind of stories. And it's kind of, yes, it's the genesis of Tam's wrestling style, but in many ways, this feels like a 2022 Stardom match. Mm. Whereas, like, you look at the Momo Watanabe match that we just talked about, it feels different to what we see in today's era, even with Momo Watanabe. But this match, I think if you transplanted it to 2022 and ignored, like, obviously the history of, oh, wow, Arisa's wrestling in 2022, this match wouldn't feel out of place at all.
Yeah.
You go, oh, yes, this is a 2022 Stardom match. This doesn't feel from back in 2019. And the style did change a bit, not just in the presentation of these shows, but just in the way the matches flowed. You get the slow, you know, back and forth striking that we didn't always get, that kind of New Japan strong style aspect. You know, we get that in the middle of it. You get the storytelling moments really flowing through. It's a beautifully crafted match. I don't think it's the best match of Eva's career. But it's definitely one of the best stories told. And I totally understand why people look at this as their favorite match or why this won the 2019 Stardom Match of the Year. I can absolutely see why it got the acclaim it did.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's not the best of Arisa's, in my opinion, of course. It's Tam, I have to have a hard think about. She's had so many more matches, so it's harder to think of them all. But it's a big moment, obviously. It's what Tam, you know, could carry on and really make her overall. And this is the best way to explain this match. He said, you know, you could throw it into 2022, 2023, it'll fit right in. This is the type of match that people will be on Twitter the next day and complaining that Dave Meltzer didn't give 5 stars. that's what this match is, I think, in a lot of ways. It's very fitting of like the Shuri Julia match that we just saw at the end of last year. That it has a lot of story in it, but it's also hard strikes. You know, big crazy spots. It kind of embodies a little bit of both of that, which I think you really hit the nail on the head. It's a present day Stardom match.
Yeah, it's very raw too, because Tam is finding herself as a wrestler in this match. Arisa is still finding her footing a little bit as a wrestler, although I think you can see the growth just between this and the Momo match in the way she wrestles. But because it is still kind of raw in nature, yeah, they just kind of let it all hang out. Like, with a lot of those strikes are unprotected headshots. And maybe in hindsight, looking at how quickly Risa did have to then retire in this second run, it's a little disconcerting when she's throwing shoot headbutts and just taking, you know, kicks to the face. But when you just break it down in terms of an actual match, it's utterly compelling viewing, especially with one of Stardom's most fascinating stories tacked on as well. Yeah, like, yeah, as you said, you can watch this without the story, but when you take in mind the whole friendship, enemy kind of storyline that they were running here, it just means that much more. And everything just kind of hits that little bit more because you get more of the TAM emotional storytelling knowing the backstory.
You sure do. And I think with those, you know, big shots that we see throughout this match, I mean, besides like the finishing sequence, the spot I always remember is Tam's, you know, just huge kicks to Arisa, because she's hitting one after another after another to her head, and it's like, oh my god. Of course.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Finishing sequence, it's one of my favorite finishes ever, where, you know, Risa hits the Brazilian kick and Tam's like midair falling when Risa goes for the pin. It's like, yeah, it's so perfect looking. That's like that, I think that's like probably the top gif or whatever that goes around when Risa's kick is flying around from time to time. I think that's probably the one. But just tremendous pro wrestling, fantastic storytelling, as you'd expect from Tam Nakano. And really, I think that's when Arisa Shiki said, yes, this is my time. You know, that's how you really kick it into gear with a match like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I think it was a proof of concept match for her. So yes, my style can deliver these kind of matches. Yeah. And I'm deserving and ready of this belt because, yeah, she did come back and get essentially hot shot to the title. But when you see the quality of work she's putting out, it makes sense.
Yeah, it sure does. Now we move on to the next match here up for discussion, which is one of my all-time favorites, is Arisa Shiki versus Hazuki. Very fitting, by the way, that we discuss Hazuki's latest Wonder of Stardom, or last Wonder of Stardom title challenge right after her most recent. It was kind of crazy that worked out this way. I'll tell you, when we planned this, we did not know that Hazuki was going to be challenging for the Wonder title. That's for damn sure, seeing that we recorded the first two parts of this episode long before that match was even official. So I'm not going to make us look smart.
Exposing the business, brother.
I have to. I want to make us, I want to be truthful to the viewers. But this is a match that I have written about. This is a match that I've went back and watched more than most matches I've like in wrestling that I've gone back and watched, let alone Stardom. I mean, the only matches that I might have seen more is when I had the WWE ladder match DVD when I was a kid, and I put that thing on all the time because they were ladder matches and they were cool. That's a cheat code, though. Kid,
so you could just rewatch it again and again.
Yeah, we had like a movie player in one of my parents' cars, and I used to put it in there and I just stare at it, watch the same match 75 times. I think I watched the first TLC match like way too many times to count. Well,
you could recite it move for move.
Probably. It's probably why I think of it now. I'm like, oh, so what is everyone so excited about? Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I watched it a little too much. But this is like one of my favorites, and maybe the reason is that a lot of what we see now with Hazuki is that her intensity mixed with Arisa Shiki's intensity, it makes magic in a pro wrestling ring. you know, from the opening bell where these two go, you know, forehead to forehead, you're just like, oh, they're gonna destroy each other. And you know, you get those classic Oedo Tai spots of going through again, Risa getting tossed through the chairs. But Hazuki made sure to go all around the ring to do that to the poor girl.
Gotta share the love with the audience.
Exactly. Oh, you were sitting there? Not anymore. Oh, you were sitting there? Not anymore. And then it's just viciousness from here on out. To me, it's probably my favorite. It's between this one and the Kagetsu match as my favorite Hazuki matches of all time. Both phenomenal. It's probably this one because I favor Risa, of course, but those are probably the top two. And maybe I'm eating worms. Admittedly, we are recording this before the Saikamatani match. So if I get laughed at on when people listen to this, then so be it. But it's everything that makes Hazuki a great professional wrestler. It's what we see now when she gets big matches. And it feels like the full version of Risa Shiki in there.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of excitement surrounding this match when it happened. Because, like, this is, again, like, Risa has now gotten into her groove. You know what you're getting from a Risa Hoshiki matches. And this is also when Hazuki was firing all cylinders, and there was a lot of buzz and a lot of hype around where Hazuki was heading. You know, she was always a very good prospect, but in this sort of past year with Oedo Tai and sort of learning under Kagetsu, I think she really unlocked what made her the best version of herself. And even now in, you know, 2022, 2023, the best version of Hazuki is when she fires up a bit more, when she dials that intensity up. And, you know, you get the peak version of Hazuki in this match, going up against someone who can match that intensity, match that aggression. And, you know, you talk about the Kagetsu match with Hazuki, and that was kind of the mentor versus student sort of battle. This is just two people who just want to win by knockout in a lot of ways. And it is just exciting. It kind of takes the style of the Momo Watanabe match and just dials up the intensity, adds a bit more variance to what's going on. And I think, yeah, this is top two Hazuki matches that we've seen, and arguably her best match, and arguably Arisa's best match as well.
There are so many great near falls at the end of this match that had me personally on the edge of my seat all over again. That Hazuki Strahl specifically,
yep.
I think the building was about to jump out of their seats, thinking Hazuki had this one in the bag. And you know, by then Arisa was already two successful defenses in, so it wasn't crazy if she lost.
Yeah, now, I think most people expected Arisa to win here and retain, but like, again, Hazuki was just firing so hotly right now. It felt like if they had made the decision to put the belt on her, it would have made sense, and it would have kind of been capitalizing on a moment. And yeah, Hazuki would go on to retire not too long after this moment, really. So it was kind of maybe a what if at the time. But yeah, that Hazuki Strahl especially because like earlier in the match, Arisa had this match won with that little turnaround splash, pulls Hazuki up before the three count, hits the Brazilian kick, kind of that arrogance that we've seen a couple of her matches. It feels like they're ending the match, if not there, maybe a couple of minutes later. It then goes like that's halfway in the match. It's a very interesting decision. Yeah. One that there's probably the one thing about the match I'm not totally sold on, because it is kind of weird to see a near victory then be halfway through the match like that. But they do such a good job of making it feel like that's a critical error that Arisa makes that Hazuki's going to capitalize on. And because she has stuff like the Hazuki Strahl, a beautiful looking Rings of Saturn submission in this match, even though it makes sense for Arisa to retain, the reign's just been long enough that they could change the champion without it being too obtuse. And Hazuki's just hot enough that it makes perfect sense. And Arisa's good enough that she could afford to lose the belt here and still be able to rebuild her momentum. So it's a good match in terms of like it was a believable result either way to a certain extent, but in hindsight, Arisa made all of the sense in the world.
Yeah, there's something, and I think it's even better timing because, you know, we've been seeing for the past couple weeks people highlighting, you know, Hazuki's, you know, intensity in these preview matches with Saya Kamatani. And it almost, I think I've seen like some tweets that like, wow, you know, I didn't know Hazuki had that in her. I was like, little do you know. I was like, Hazuki has always had that in her. It's just a matter of she gets a little more heelish. You know, she's been playing a good baby face in the current world of Stardom, but when she's at like heelish, I'm going to beat the hell out of you mode, which we've seen, she's sprinkling in more and more as time goes on, which I think is definitely worth keeping an eye on in the present day of Stardom. But when she's doing that, it's hard to beat her intensity. And
it's why so many people, as soon as Suzuki came back, they were kind of like, can we see her go back to her Edo Tai, or can we see her just kind of become a heel? Because they know what's lying under, but sort of bubbling under the surface. And Hazuki's kind of playing the mentor teacher role in Stars, because we all know Mayu Iwatani isn't responsible enough to be playing that role. But it kind of means like you get that intensity, but she's dialing it back a bit because she's got students to teach.
Yeah.
You don't show that kind of unbridled anger, but when it comes, it hits like a freight train.
Yeah, you say that, but she slapped Moa Kogo across the face the first chance she got in the ring. So,
I mean, by all reports, Moa Kogo is deserving that.
I do think it's interesting though that Hazuki is now in the Arisa role in Stars. Right, that is literally her spot. She's the number two in Stars behind Mayu Iwatani. Now she just needs that white belt to really solidify that, right? But yeah, just a tremendous, excellent, any adjective you want to describe this match with that explains how awesome it is. It's exactly the type of title match you want in the middle of a reign, right? It's like, for me, it's what we were seeing out of Saya from time to time in her reign, right? And it's kind of what I wish we were seeing out of Saya towards the end. And I understand I'm probably getting slapped in the face still as we come off of Saya Kamatani. Yeah, it's fine. But the thing with Hazuki is that's what she brings. If she gets a title match, she's going to go out there and deliver, even if, you know, she's not winning in the end. And
she's going to force the opponent to match the intensity. And when a wrestler can do that and play off it, like we saw with Kagetsu, and like we see here with Arisa, that's when you get kind of the best version of everyone involved. Arisa is great, but when she's forced to be aggressive and, you know, throw the heavy hits and stuff, it's great. And she does a great job selling here too. I think that's important to mention, because we talk about Arisa as an offensive wrestler, and we've very good reason, like she's got one of the most exciting offensive styles in professional wrestling, but she does a great job here of selling the baby face in peril and kind of getting overwhelmed at times by the just hyper aggressive Hazuki.
Yeah, and then she goes killer mode to put the Hazuki away because
she
got angry. She got angry, and I think that's kind of when you get like an Arisa we didn't ever get to fully see. Because
we saw bits and pieces off.
Yeah. We saw bits and pieces in her title match. And the last one we're actually going to talk about here, we saw a lot of it. A lot of that heel Arisa Ishiki, if we ever got to that point in her career. And that's where we're going to go here. Now, Arisa Ishiki versus Utami Hayashishita. You may have heard of her. She ended up doing pretty well after this match at the Stardom 9th anniversary show. I was sitting here watching the match, and I was like, 1 year later, Tommy was World of Stardom champion. We don't need to talk about Arisa being retired. I don't need to do that. We've stressed that enough in this part, three-part series. But Utami, 1 year later, was world champion. And for me, personally, this is Utami's first great singles match. For me.
Yeah, I think you could maybe mention...
Or standout singles match, maybe.
Yeah. Like her match with Momo Watanabe was pretty good as well. But I think this is the match that kind of announced that she was ready to take the next step. You know, she came in as a super rookie, won all these championships, and straight away it's like, oh, okay, well, she's going to become a world champion at this rate. And the question was a matter of when, not if. Maybe it was a little bit too quick. But I think, you know, you see this match here. And really, like, the end of 2019 heading into 2020, just before the COVID pandemic, it feels like Utami's starting to figure things out on what she needs to do to become, to take it to that next level. And then the break, she sort of gets the look down better as well. This is kind of an in-between look for her, between the, you know, the long hair that doesn't fully suit her yet, the attire that works but doesn't quite stand out yet. This is very much like a prototype Utami. But this match is proof that, you know, she just needs a couple little tweaks here and there, and then you've got your world champion that you kind of was seeing from the very first match that she had.
Yeah, and it's so weird watching this match now, because, like, seeing Utami like this is, again, so weird. It's just like, what happened? And I think that's like a lot of her early run, because of who she is now. And it's like, not only is she like seen by many as one of the best in the world, but she feels like she's like that untouchable being almost in stardom. And it's matches like these that got her there. Like you said, it's, you know, getting cracked open in the match and having blood go down your face, and not only able to keep going, but really bring it to Risa to the point where it's like, you know, it wouldn't be shocking if she won again, because again, Utami's getting ready for that moment.
Yeah.
Was it going to be now or was it going to be later? We know it's later. But like when she catches Risa on the Os Cutter attempt, I just call it the Os Cutter. Everyone knows what that means. And hits her with a German. It's like, oh, there's those Utami Germans that you're so used to these days. And she caught her multiple times. Yeah. And it's like, you know, she's at the top of her game. She's almost there. And like you said, in character, but as well as who she was, there were tweaks that needed to be made for her to get to that moment. But man, Risa was an absolute jerk in this match.
And this is where, again, like kind of the what could have been with Risa comes through, because you see kind of this sadistic side of her come out after the blood gets drawn from Utami. And yeah, you almost feel her going, okay, how can I make the most of this? Cobra clutch, where's the camera? Where's the hard cam? Look at how much I'm making her bleed. She's got this sick smile on her face. There's some fantastic photography that came out of this match. And it's just kind of changing her character just a little bit. She's always been aggressive, always enjoyed the fight, but you didn't quite get this impression of, oh, she wants to make people suffer. And with that kind of super happy, smiley persona that she has, you just get this tinge of character development sort of bubbling under the surface. And whether they would have followed through with this or whether it's just her kind of operating in the moment, I feel like the blood spot changed a lot of this match. You know, when it first happens, they're a little slow in readjusting and finding what story are we telling now. And Utami, you know, was quite strong in the beginning and then had to very much sell like I'm in peril quite early in this match after she gets cracked open, before starting to throw the power behind things and get that sort of swing back through. It's a very visceral match. It's obviously got the imagery, but it's a great snapshot of where Risa was at her ultimate peak and Utami right before she finds that peak. And the end result is a fantastic match that feels different from the others we've seen because it's power versus striking. It's very reminiscent to the Jungle Kyona match from 2019 that was on the short list to talk about on this episode, but did miss out. But it's good to see her working against this style and having to deal with a completely different opponent and kind of having to lead the way because she's the more experienced wrestler here, but working with someone that ultimately is pretty close to her experience level.
Yeah, this version of Risa, you know, maybe we never would have gotten to see it, but this version versus Tam and what Tam would go on to be. I think we would have had an even better match than their first one. Because of that viciousness.
Yeah.
To go with what Tam was and what she is now. and because Tam is so much more confident than she was back then.
Oh, yeah.
To the point where, you know, she is not only one of Stardom's most popular wrestlers, if not most popular, but she is also understanding of her character to the point where that bringing out what Orisa had at this time would have been special.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you just have to look. Yeah, this that Tam match was her coming out party. And you look at the consistency she delivers with matches now. Even if she's not your personal style of wrestler, you can see how it's evolved and grown from mid-2019 to 2023. What we could have got in those situations with a more confident wrestling Tam up against an Orisa who's building upon her character and fine-tuning her wrestling style as well. Yeah, it would have been a hell of a match to sort of see the Tam Orisa too, or see them, you know, fully realize Dream Shine as a tag team, which they didn't get to fully realize, unfortunately.
No, no, they did not. Well, that wraps up our little match review here. Five matches, kind of really exploring a lot of Orisa Ishiki's peaks and moments and ways of what her career would be. You know, we'll hit that jungle match somewhere down the road. There's a whole jungle episode to be had, of course. So episodes. Come on. I know who I'm with. I know. I take it back. I messed up. God. But you know, we'll probably hit the Orisa match when we get to jungle down the road. Yeah. So but this whole series, of course, I was very open. This was the reason I wanted to do this show in the first place. And now, before we wrap up, we will talk about her impact, her legacy on Stardom. And you know what? I talk a lot first. So, you know what? I'm going to let Trent go.
I mean, you've always mentioned it so beautifully, 151 matches, and she managed to leave such a lasting impression and impact. It's very difficult for wrestlers with a 10-year career to do what she's done in terms of making people look back fondly and, you know, sort of realize what they had. Unfortunately, Orisa was just someone who wasn't going to be able to stick around for a long time, but was able to deliver such a good time. Yeah, there's no wrestler that can emulate what Orisa brought to the game, be it with her striking, be it with her wrestling style, or even just her character. Like, she was a genuine kind of light-up-the-room personality when she rocked up, whether it was backstage, whether it was in matches, like even with the pre-match stuff that she does versus Suzuki. When she's in doing the interview that Stardom used to always run, she's got this big beaming smile, even though she's about to go to war with someone who can match her intensity. She's just so happy and excited to be taking part in it. And that's really the thing that I think, you know, sticks with me. As much as the striking game is one of a kind and unique, and you know, I think you could bring in so many fans just saying, watch Orisa destroy people with knees and kicks. You make lifelong fans showing them Orisa just being Orisa.
Yeah, that's well said. Looking at her impact, her legacy, her entire run really of importance was in one of Stardom's most popular years, one of Stardom's biggest years. And I think that is a credit to who she was as a wrestler, because a lot of it has to do with her. Right? It's like, you know, you talk about that bubbly, smiling personality, and you know, I don't know if people remember 2019 as fondly if it's not her in that white belt role because of that, but also of the matches she was having and of just what she was able to create inside the ring and outside the ring in many ways. You know, it's not just about the title run, it's about Dream Shine and what they were able to do. It's about what Stars was as a group at that time. And unfortunately, also when it comes to Orisa, her legacy also will forever be What If. That is the shame of it all. I was sitting there watching these matches again. I said, her and Shuri were so close. So close to connecting before Orisa had to retire. And I just think of where Orisa was, especially the middle of this reign, right? And I think of what Shuri's gone on to do, and it's like, yeah, we can talk about Orisa and Mayu all day. I understand that. Trust me, I get it. But I'm thinking of other dream matches that would have been like absolutely stellar, absolutely perfect. That would have been one of them, because their backgrounds, their, you know, conflicting styles, it would have made for such a fantastic match in a lot of ways. And again, with the what if, because as I said, the what if never goes away with Orisa Shiki. What would she have done after this? Right? Where, what shows would she have main evented? Where would she be on top of the card right now? But at the same time, there is something oddly great about what her career was. It's that she didn't need to answer all those what ifs to become one of stardom greats, to become someone that so many people remember fondly, to have, you know, those match of the years, to have those matches that some people never have in their career. She just did that in 151 matches. I gotta get back to that.
Yeah. to me, like, the closest comparison I could make outside of wrestling is she's Firefly. She came in for one season, delivered an absolute masterclass, and left people wanting more, and kept people wondering what if and what could have been. But that one season we got, those 151 matches, or at least the second run that she had, is magical. And there's so much you can go back to and take from and enjoy. You just have to look at how excited Rossi was about her back when she was 16 years old, back when stardom was beginning. We talked about it back in the first episode covering Orisa. There was so much hope that he had for what she could become. And obviously she didn't get to fully realize it on either run. But you kind of see, yeah, the first run, the what could have been, and then the second run is kind of proof that, yeah, Rossi's eye was bang on when it came to what Orisa could be.
Yeah, that Rossi guy was pretty good at his job. Well,
we'll
give him that credit. But yeah, watching these matches again, and truthfully, as I got into them, I was like, I want to watch more. I want to watch them all again. I want to watch the jungle match. I want to watch the Konami match. I want to watch the, you know, some people will hear this, but I want to watch the B match, because that up until that point, that was my favorite B match until her last match at Stardom. And I want to watch all of them, because again, it's hard to kind of capture all that magic into one reign like she did. And you know, it stinks. Like, you know, we're sitting here, right? Himeka's going to retire in a month and change. And, you know, a lot of people get sad about that. And understandably so, you included.
very pointed.
Yeah, but at least she's getting the retirement road. At least she's doing it on her own terms.
Yeah.
Risa Shiki didn't get to do that.
Yeah, it's her retirement is one of the saddest out there because of the circumstances and just the ultimate lack of fanfare. Some of it undeserved, some of it understandable.
Yeah, and you know, now we sit here in 2023. I have no idea what Orisa Shiki's doing these days, but I can say I hope she's doing the absolute best. I hope she's found peace. You know, I know. Thankfully, she was able to come to acceptance of the Orisa Shiki name after she wasn't for so long. I think her, you know, staying away from socials and stuff, I'm sure she's out there somewhere. No one's just found her yet. I hope she's enjoying life, and I hope
probably
she's
probably one of those Japanese fan accounts. Yeah. Like, oh, why isn't Tam the red belt champion?
I know, and you know, that's like one of the things with Orisa. Anytime something pops up, she brings a smile to your face.
Yeah.
Like that's what she was doing in her post wrestling career. You know, Tam would post pictures with Orisa. It's like, yay. You know, it's like, it's those little things. And, but ultimately at the end of this one, you know, those 151 matches, that career, what a special career in such little time. Two, we're wishing Orisa Shiki all the best in her post wrestling life. And, you know, hoping whatever she's on to, whatever she's up to, she's doing great. Because I will remind everyone, whatever Risa Shiki wanted to do, she wasn't just good at it. She was great at it.
She was a natural at so many things. So it's kind of, it'd be hard to believe she didn't find something that she just clicked with and was able to do in her post-wrestling and post-music career. Whatever that might be, who knows? Knowing her, it's probably, you know, knitting or something. It's just like, yeah, this works for me. And, you know, she's got an Etsy store making Tam Nakano dolls that we're just looking out for. But, yeah, whatever it is she's doing, hoping it's the best, hoping she's living the best life she can. And even if it was only 151 matches, that's still 151 matches we can go back and watch. And as we found out, they're pretty rewatchable.
To say the least. To say the least, they are pretty rewatchable. But that is it here on this edition of the Stardom Road. It is also the final episode of the Risa Shiki series. Don't worry, she'll be back many a times. But
she might be back next fortnight.
Can confirm. Which brings me to the next step. So we will be coming back in 2 weeks, of course, with some Cinderella tournament coverage. We'll be doing 2 weeks of that before a special episode that we just thought of. So you want to come back for that. If you're listening to this now when it released, or to it, you know, a year or two or three down the road, you're going to want to check out the episode that happened in 3 weeks from after this one. So I don't
three
know.
Three episodes, 6 weeks.
Yeah, whatever. But you get it. But
this fortnight schedule is very confusing.
It sure is. It sure is. It's worse because we always forget about it.
Yeah. Yeah. but we make it work, even if we have to do it last minute. But
yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's the way we roll. But I'll wrap it up here now. For Trent, I'm Scott. Thank you for listening to the Stardom Road, Risa Shiki Part 3. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So until next time, have a good one, everybody.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This has been a Countout Podcast.